So now we need to continue a message we left off in the middle of last week. And that message was January the 23rd, 1924. This is volume 16. And it's about the three fiats. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Okay. So the paragraph we finished with, the Lord was explaining to Louisa that she had to be the one to bring the third fiat. Now, naturally enough, that's extremely difficult for her because she's the first. I mean, she's never heard of anything like this before. So almost confused, notice the almost, by what Jesus was telling me, Louisa said, my sweet love, you know how miserable I am and in what state I find myself. Therefore, I feel it is impossible for me that with my acts I may reach the same way as that of the creating fiat and the redeeming fiat. Now, Louisa knows the priests will say to her, listen, this is crazy. You can't do what God does. So Jesus has to explain it. So Jesus said, so our fiat does not contain all the power that it wants. So I want to give you Matthew 17:20 and Matthew 19:26. So if the fiat did in creation and in redemption, how can it not be able to do it in you? In other words, is anything impossible with God? What it takes is your will, because it's the divine will that carries it out. And if he's going to do something through you, it requires your will. And I will impress my fiat in yours, just as I impressed my divine fiat in the will of my humanity. So we will follow the same way. My will can do anything. Luke 1:37, nothing is impossible with God. And my all-seeingness, which is Psalm 139, and with my all-seeingness, it will present to you the acts of creation and redemption, and you, with ease, with your acts, will braid the third fiat on our fiat. So you better put Philippians 4:13 there. I can do all things in Christ who gives me the strength. Okay. So he says, aren't you happy? I don't think she knows whether she is or not. And Louisa, he said, I, in seeing that my adored Jesus, as he was speaking about his will, was disappearing from me. She was more worried about that. But she sees something new, remaining as though eclipsed within an immense light. This is going to become more and more the reality as we go on in the volumes. Now, the immense light of God, 1 Timothy 6:16, God lives in unapproachable light. And then, of course, 1 John 1:5, God is light. Okay. And Psalm 104, verse 2, Lord, you are wrapped in a robe of light. I love that expression. It describes perfectly the transfiguration of Jesus. So you remain as though eclipsed within an immense light, just as when the sun makes the stars disappear, eclipsing them within its light. Said, Jesus, my life, do not speak to me about your will, because then you will eclipse yourself within its light and I lose you and remain alone without you. Now, Louisa has the same problem as a small child. When you turn out the lights, mummy has disappeared. She's gone off the planet. She may be standing outside the door hoping you'll sleep, but the light's off and therefore I don't see anything. So Jesus is trying to explain to her that his humanity is eclipsed because the divine light is much greater than his humanity. And he says to her, but you're eclipsed from me as well. You're lost in that light as well. You don't realise this. And of course, if you look up in the day and you see only the sun, the stars are eclipsed by the sun, but they're there. And it's only when the sun withdraws its light that we can actually see the stars. So this is what he's going to try and say to her. So initially she says, oh, don't talk about this because you'll disappear on me. How can it be that your will makes me lose my life, my all? And he said, my daughter, my humanity is smaller than my eternal will, because he had to pick up his humanity on the earth. It has its boundaries, it has its limits. And therefore, as my endless will draws near you with its knowledge, my humanity is lost within its light as though eclipsed. So I put Luke 9:29 there. And I can't remember why. So my humanity is lost within its light as though eclipsed. This is why you do not see me, but I'm always in you. Now, you do not see me is 1 Peter 1:8. Peter is describing to the early church that you don't see him, but you love him and you're still filled with all the joy and glory of your redemption. And I remain always in you. That's your Luke 17:21. The kingdom of God is within you. And I enjoy as I see the little newborn of my will eclipsed within the same light as my humanity. So why is she eclipsed as well? It's because the two of them are one. The two wills are one. So we are together. And because our sight is dazzled, that means his humanity and her humanity, by the blazing light of the supreme volition, we cannot see each other. So Louisa has to come to accept something that we have all been taught about the relationship with God. Is the front door closed? And that is that your inner perception is the important one, not what your physical eyes see. Okay. So February the 2nd, 1924. I love this one. It's all about abandonment. And I think all of us are ready for this one. Abandonment forms the wings in order to fly. So this airplane, to get off the ground, has to have wings. And I think the name of the two wings are surrender and trust. Surrender and trust to get us off the ground. Okay. And of course, loss of abandonment and trust means an air disaster in the divine will, because you crash land. You come right back. Okay. So before I even read this, I want to give you something I gave you many times before, and that is the surrendered soul has found paradise on earth. That's the words of St. Madeleine du Clercq. I don't expect that you know her. I think she was the foundress of the Sisters of the Sacred Heart. Louisa said, I felt very oppressed because of the privation of my sweet Jesus, and because of other reasons which is not necessary to put on paper. And my beloved Jesus, moving in my interior, that's your Luke 17:21, pressing me to himself to give me strength, for I felt I was succumbing, told me, my daughter, my will is the life and the motion of everything. That's a very important statement. Everything. The whole universe and anything that lives on the earth. But do you know who follows its motion and takes flight in my eternal volition in such a way as to go around as it does in the sphere of eternity, be wherever it is and do whatever it does? Now look at this, because you're going to talk about the soul and the divine will. Who's the one who goes around the sphere of eternity and is wherever the divine will is and does whatever it does? It is the soul who is completely abandoned. Now, I ring the word completely, because we're all partly. Completely abandoned to the divine will. So completely abandoned means Deuteronomy 6:4 to 10. You love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind and all your being. And you trust him. You're not just trusting your own head. So, abandonment, my book says, is the wings. That's not English. Abandonment forms the wings in order to fly together with my will. As abandonment ceases, she loses the flight and the wings are destroyed. So I call that the air crash. Mm-hmm. Notice that the book is talking to you about air flight. Mm-hmm. So everyone feels the motion, the life of my will, because there is no motion which does not come from me. And they, that is those without abandonment, remain at the point in which they were. There's no takeoff. Only one who has the wings of abandonment in me and follows the same course as my will hovers over everything, both in heaven and on earth, and enters into the sphere of eternity, and goes round in the midst of the three divine persons, penetrates into their most intimate hiding places, and is aware of their secrets and of their beatitudes. That's quite a statement. So I just had to give it to you all in one. We'll go back. So only one who has the wings of abandonment in me. Now, you know I'm going to be talking to you about flight, don't you, and an aircraft and all the rest. It's all here. Okay. So only one who has the wings of abandonment in me and follows the same course as my will. In other words, we don't have an agenda of our own. Only that person hovers over everything and therefore can influence everything, both in heaven and on earth. That's the first thing. That person hovers over everything. Now, when you go to the Bible, you find at the dawn of creation that the Spirit of God hovered over the chaos, and then the Word of God came forth to bring it all into being, or to bring order out of chaos. That's actually what he did. And that's what he's trying to do in the divine will as well. When you come to the dawn of redemption, you have the Holy Spirit hovering over our Blessed Mother, the Mother of the Redeemer. And when you come to the Redeemer himself, you have the Holy Spirit hovering over Jesus at his baptism. Now, the hovering of the Spirit means that God is going to do something tremendous. OK, so if the soul in the divine will hovers over everything, it means that God is going to do incredible work through that soul, both in heaven and on earth. So that person also enters into the sphere of eternity, which he will describe in the next paragraph. That soul goes round in the midst of the three divine persons, in the midst of, that you're talking about, therefore, the very essence of God, the very centre of the universe, the very, I don't know how to put it, the first beginning. It's right in the heart of everything. Not only do you go around in the midst of the three divine persons, they penetrate into their most intimate hiding places. I'll give you a comment on this in a second. And because of that, they are aware of their secrets and of their beatitudes. Now, right from the very beginning of these volumes, you saw that the Lord began to reveal his secrets, what he was doing on the earth and why, and all the rest are gradually revealed to Louisa. And even though she has to suffer for her brothers and sisters on the earth, she still has this extraordinary joy of being in this relationship. So you have the secrets and the beatitudes. Now, there's a big thing in the Bible about the counsel of God, being in the counsel of God. I want to give you the inner court of the Lord from Ezekiel 8, verse 3 and 16, the inner court. Now, as you know, the temple in Jerusalem had an outer court where eventually at the time of Christ, even the Gentiles could go into it. And then you had an inner court for the women of Israel, and then the men and the priests, and then you had the Holy of Holies. So that's Ezekiel 8, verse 3 and verse 16. But you have another concept as well, and that is someone taken into the inner council of God. And that's where the saints are taken. And that's the position that Louisa is in, that the Lord actually tells her what's going on and explains his actions towards the human race and everything. So for that, I want to give you Jeremiah 23:18, where Jeremiah challenged the false prophets, "Have you been in the council of God?" Okay. And also Psalm 82:1. Now, that's a big subject. I'm just giving you just a few references to it. So Jesus is saying that someone who lives in the divine will, so this is your total abandonment stage, is brought right into the very heart of the Trinity, into the council of God, into the inner courts. So, of course, you know the secrets. It happens as an expression that you use quite frequently. We would say it's the same as. So it's the same as an engine which has the primary wheel in the centre and many other small wheels around it which are fixed. Now, to me, that's the Swiss watch. So you have your big wheel and the tiny little wheels all around it. So you move the big wheel and all the little ones move as well. As the primary wheel moves, all receive motion. But they never arrive at touching the primary wheel because they're fixed. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. Nor do they know anything of what the primary wheel does or of the goods that it contains. But there's another small wheel. Now, the small wheel is the soul in the divine will. And it's not fixed. And by means of a mechanism, if you go down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines in my book, the mechanism is complete abandonment to the divine will. Do you see that? Mm-hmm. It's towards the end of that paragraph. Mm-hmm. So he says, by means of a certain mechanism, which is abandonment to the divine will, this soul goes round continuously across all the small wheels. So the influence is on the whole machine. Now, he's talking about the machine of the universe. And then find itself in each motion of the primary wheel. Now, this is another image for the inner courts of the Lord. To begin its round again. And now this little itinerant wheel, I love being called an itinerant one, knows what is there in the primary wheel and takes part in the goods that it contains. Now, the primary wheel is my will. And the small wheels which are fixed are the souls that are abandoned to themselves. Uh-oh. I think you need to colour that in a different colour to the other colour you're using. The souls that are abandoned to themselves, they're not going anywhere. Which renders them immobilised in good. The little itinerant wheel is the soul who lives in my will, and the mechanism is the complete abandonment to me. In other words, you get enormous freedom in the kingdom if you just simply abandon yourself to the Lord. So each lack of abandonment in me is a round that you lose in the sphere of eternity. Oh, he said, if you only knew what it was to lose an eternal round. We've no concept, of course, of an eternal round. Okay, so the next paragraph is all about the wheel of eternity. And when I come to a point like this in Louisa, I can't draw for nuts. I start drawing. It actually makes huge sense if you start drawing it, that the divine will is a sphere. And out of that comes this continuous overflow of all these things. He sends out new love, new beauty, new grace, new life, new everything. And it's continuous. Okay, and we have to participate in it. It calls this the sphere of eternity. And it has no beginning or no end. And that's why the church has always used a circle for God. It's no beginning or no end. But the Irish monks decided they'd improve on the circle. Can you improve on the circle? Yes, you can give it swing one, swing two, and swing three for the three persons in the Trinity. But it's all one line. And the beauty of the Book of Kells is to see what they did. They did the Trinity this way. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. All one line. And so it is still the sphere of eternity, but put into your shamrock. It's a fantastic thing, you know. So here's the wheel of eternity. On hearing this, Louisa said, "But to me, my love, what does eternity mean? What is this eternal round?" And Jesus added, "My daughter, eternity is an immense circle." Now, I'm not going to go down this route just right now, but in these writings you will find, as you do in the Bible, that there are certain geometrical shapes that are considered perfect and reflect what God is and what God is doing. One of them is the circle. One of them is the cube. A cube is a perfect thing. Another one is an
equilateral triangle.
Yeah, you see it. I never get around it. But the angles are the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those three represent God absolutely perfectly. Yeah. And so the scientists are right when they tell you mathematics gives you the whole story. Mm-hmm. The scientists are actually right. I was never good at math. But never mind. So eternity is an immense circle, such that one cannot know either where it begins or where it ends. So the circle is the eternity. Okay. In this circle, there is God, without beginning and without end. And there he possesses infinite happiness, infinite beatitude, infinite joys, infinite riches, infinite beauties, and all the rest of his attributes. Okay. At each divine motion, which never ceases, he issues new happiness, new beauty, new beatitudes, new joy, new everything. Okay. Now, I've written Psalm 121, verse 4 beside that. And he does it from the circle of eternity, that is, where he is himself. But each new act is an act that is never interrupted. You see, this is leading to him saying to Louisa and to us that our surrender and our acts must never be interrupted. Have you worked out how that can happen?
Fusing.
Hmm?
Fusing.
But how often do you fuse?
All the time.
How do you do it all the time?
Early in the morning.
Yeah, but I'm not actually saying that.
Okay.
See, if an act is to be uninterrupted, and it starts at 6 o'clock in the morning, it goes on forever. There is no stop. The only way I know how to handle it, it may not be the right thing, but the only way I know how to handle it is to say to the Lord, I am placing the intention that from this moment to the moment of my death, including my last breath, this is what I'm doing. That's the way I cover it. To be an uninterrupted act. Do you know what I mean? But I tell myself two or three times a day to make sure I remember. He's not going to have a problem remembering. It's us that has the problem remembering. But it's placing the intention that this is what I want to do. And he tells us in the early volumes that placing the intention is extremely important, doesn't he? That's the only way I know how to solve it. If you find a better way, tell me. I'm open. So it's an action that doesn't cease. Okay, and it's the unceasing part of the action that we have to get round. It's never interrupted, though one is different from the other. Distinct among ourselves, our contentments are always new. Our beatitudes are such and so many that while we are enjoying one, another one surprises us. Now, in this continuous act, there's got to be different things. Because he's saying that everything is different. You know, there's beauty and happiness and peace and joy and all the rest of it. And there's love and all the rest of it. So how do you cover that? All I can do is tell you what I do. I'm not saying it's right. It's just my attempt to respond to this. And that's all it is. And that is, I say to the Lord, at every nanosecond, you know what a nanosecond is? 1 millionth of a second. Every nanosecond of my whole life, from this moment to the last breath that I take, I, in your divine will, I want to adore, praise, bless, honour, worship, praise and love you. You see the different acts. Now, you can't physically do it at every moment, but you can place the intention that this is what you want to do. And he says, if you desire it, I'll do it. Is that okay? All I'm trying to do is say how I attempt to respond to this. I'm not saying it's right. It's just the way I try to respond to it. So he says that, you know, these acts that come out of this continuous act are all different. Our contentments are always new. Everything in God is new. He never patches. Do you remember he said that Christianity was not a patch on Judaism. Okay. Our Beatitudes are such and so many that while we are enjoying one, another surprises us. And it's always so. And they never end. They are eternal, immense, just as we are. And what is eternal has the power of making ever new things arise. So I have a whole spate of references for you that the Lord always wants to do a new thing. Is that okay? I'm not going to give you this in any proper order or anything. Ezekiel 18:31. This is all about God doing a new thing. Lamentations 3:23. Isaiah 42:9. Isaiah 43:19. Isaiah 62:2. Isaiah 65:17. Revelation 21:1-5. Now, there are more. But the Lord always wants to do a new thing. And it's important for us to remember that in our own life experience as well, that the Lord always wants to do something new. He doesn't want to patch up your past. You're going to hear that on Saturday. And what he says is, what is old, things that are repeated, they don't exist in what is eternal. How is that? What is old, things that are repeated, they don't exist. In eternity, everything's new. That's why you won't be bored in heaven. Everything's new all the time. But do you know who it is that in heaven shares more in this newness and is never exhausted? It is one who has practiced more good on the earth. This good will be like a seed which will bring the soul the knowledge of our beatitudes, joys, beauty, love, goodness and all the other attributes of God. And depending on the good which the soul has practiced on the earth, which is in some harmony with our varied beatitudes, she will come closer to us and will find herself in large gulps, will fill herself in large gulps with that beatitude whose seed she contains. Now, several times in these writings, when Jesus was explaining love, he brought Aloysius Gonzaga out of heaven to meet Louisa and told her that he took his PhD in love. They're my words. Okay, so he illustrated for her what he meant when he was describing love. So whatever area that we have majored in, if I can put it that way, that is going to be the area that will open most for us in heaven. Other areas will open up as well. It's interesting, isn't it? So she will come closer to us and she'll fill herself in large gulps with that beatitude whose seed she contains to the point of overflowing outside. That's your John 7:37-39. From your own heart will flow fountains of living water. Okay. She will share in everything that the circle of eternity contains. Look at the generosity of God. And she will be filled with it in place of the seeds acquired on earth. So I just want you to do CF, that means compare. Look at this other text, it's not directly on it. So compare 1 Corinthians 3:11-15, where Paul is speaking on a much lower level to people at a much earlier stage in their relationship with God. And he's saying to them that your beatitude in heaven will be parallel to the good you've done on earth. So he's saying it at another level. So it will happen as to one who has learned music. So we now get the example, the illustration. Okay. And his examples are very interesting. Like, I would never have taken music as the example to illustrate this. So watch this. Take music or a job or a science area, he said. When music is played, many listen and enjoy, but who understands it? Who feels all those notes of joy or sorrow, penetrates into his intelligence and descend into his heart? Who feels as though being filled and seeing in act the scenes that the music actually expresses? It's one who has studied and one who's worked hard on it. That's very interesting, because it's telling us the more we study, Louisa, the more we open ourselves up to the deepest understandings and therefore the deepest experience. The others enjoy the music, but they don't understand. I agree with that completely. Their enjoyment is in what sounds to their ears, but their whole interior remains empty. That's very interesting, isn't it? So the music isn't actually giving them any ecstasy. It's the same for one who has learned sciences. Who enjoys more? One who has studied and worn out his intelligence over books, over many scientific things, or the one who's only looked at them? Indeed, it's the one who has studied, can earn fair profits, can occupy distinct positions, while the other one can only enjoy with his sight if he sees things related to the sciences. The same with all other things. If this happens on earth, he said, much more so does it happen in heaven, where justice weighs with the scales of love every little good act done by the creature. That really needs to be underlined. And on that good act places an unending happiness, joy and beauty. So, first of all, I want to give you Matthew 25:34. That's the final judgment scene in Matthew's Gospel. Enter into the joy of your Lord because you did these acts. Okay. Luke 12:7. And Luke 21:18. Because you have Jesus' parables as well, in which the man with 10 talents ends up with the one talent of the man who refused to use them, you know. Now, what will be for the soul who has lived in my will, in which all her acts remain in an eternal and divine seed? The circle of eternity will pour itself upon her to such an extent that the whole celestial Jerusalem will remain stupefied and will make new feasts and will enjoy new glory. Now notice that the Jerusalem that is to come, which St. John speaks about in the book of Revelation, at the moment only exists in heaven among the blessed. Okay. But when the divine will is actually running on the earth, as it is in heaven, then the Jerusalem will come down to the earth, and that will be God's triumph. So February the 5th, 1924, this is about the divine will again. Louisa said, I feel embittered because of the privation of my highest and only good. Even more, I felt that everything was over for me and that the one who is my life was to come no more, and that all the past had been a game of fantasy. Now, she gets that problem frequently. Oh, had it been in my power, I would have burnt up all the writings so that no trace might be left about me. My nature also felt the painful effects of this. Okay. That is, the soul communicates its pain to the body. And this is something we're going to have to look into. The world is going to have to change its approach to medicine, because a lot of the time it is soul pain that the person has. I remember meeting a doctor once who was absolutely brilliant, had incredible success with his patients. And it's because he would sit the person down and the person would give the symptoms and all the rest of it. And the doctor would look at the person. And I'm thinking of one particular case. It was a case of a woman who gave him whatever symptoms she had. And the doctor looked at her and he said, what's your relationship with your mother like? And she said, what's that got to do with my symptoms? He said, it's everything to do with them. You're expressing it in your body. He said, go home, be reconciled with your mother. Go out and celebrate and come back. And if you still have the symptoms, he said, I'll give you something for them. The woman was healed when she reconciled with her mother. You see, the soul pain expresses itself in the body. And when we deal with it, then the soul is released. And the body too is released. And I think myself that that's part of coming back into the divine order. You know, and that's why on our journey into the fullness of divine will, where the Lord has to do a lot of work on us to make sure that the trouble that our body has experienced as a result of our journey, that they've all got to be dealt with, and the body just gradually come back into order. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, the body will come back into order. The mind will come back into order. The emotions will come back into order. Everything will come back into order. It'll be a wonderful thing. Yeah. My nature also felt the painful effects of this. So the body is expressing the pain of the soul. In medical terms, they call that psychosomatic.
Yeah.
And in Ireland, they made dreadful mistakes about this in the past. They said, it's all in your head. They were partly right, and a half-truth is very dangerous. My nature too felt the painful effects of this, but it is useless to say on paper what I went through, because the paper too, cruel, has not a word of comfort for me, and does not give me the one whom I so much long for. On the contrary, by saying it, it makes my pains more bitter, therefore I move on. So, while I was in such a hard state, my beloved Jesus made himself seen. This is fascinating. With a stick of fire, not a stick of wood, in his hand, telling me, my daughter, where do you want me to beat you with this stick? I want to strike the world, and therefore I've come to you to see how many blows you want to receive yourself, so as to give rest to them. How much do you love your neighbour? You see, if we really let go of the self, I'm not in it for me. If we've really let the human will surrender to the divine will, then it's what God wants is the only thing that we want. Okay? And he wants that all people will be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth. He wants the whole lot of them. Doesn't matter whether they're in good religions or bad religions, what colour they are, what culture, what age or anything else, he wants everyone saved and come to the knowledge of the truth. So you'll find that in Paul's first letter to Timothy, and you'll find it in the Acts of the Apostles. I don't have the verses. So tell me where you want me to beat you. And Louisa, who was so embittered at the time, she said, beat me wherever you want to beat me. I don't want to know anything. I want nothing but your will. Just watch her incredible freedom here. Okay. And he again, he said, I want to know from you where you want me to beat you. In other words, I want to know your will on the subject. And Louisa said, no. I'll never do that. I want there where you want. And Jesus turned to ask me again, seeing that I kept answering, I want nothing but your will. So he repeated, so you don't even want to say where you want me to beat you. In other words, Louisa is trying to not let her will have any space at all. And this is the test that's given to her. Okay. And because that's what you're told about both Jesus in his humanity and Blessed Mother, that they didn't give any space to their own will. And so here's Jesus testing her, and she says, no, I only want your will. I don't care what you do. I only want your will. That's incredible freedom, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, and the other thing you look at is she's already in incredible interior pain, and she still says yes to suffering for others. So you're dealing with absolute heroism here. Then without saying anything else, he beat me. These blows were painful, but since they were coming from the hands of Jesus, I have to change the English here a bit. They infused light into me and also strength and trust. So because they were coming from Jesus, he gave me light, strength and trust as well. So after he struck me in such a way that I felt all beaten up, I clung to his neck and drawing near his mouth, I tried to suckle. And now usually when she does that, she's looking for to share in his bitterness. But as I did so, a most sweet liquid came into my mouth, which cheered me all up. Notice the balance. It's not suffering for suffering's sake. It's that it's a redemptive suffering that's asked. But this was not my will, she said. Her will was that she was willing to take the bitterness. Rather, I wanted his bitterness, for he had so many in his holy heart. And then I said to him, my love, what a hard lot is mine. Your privation kills me. The fear that I might go out of your will crushes me. Tell me, where have I offended you? Why do you leave me? And even though you are with me now, it seems to me that you haven't come to stay, like. I love that. You see just how much she loves him. It's really fantastic. It seems to me that you have come to stay with me like, not come to stay with me like before, to be together, but you've come in passing. How can I be without you, my life? You yourself tell me if I can. And while I was saying this, I burst into tears. Now, she's not crying because she's all beaten up. She's not crying because of the terrible bitterness that she's experiencing. She's crying only because she doesn't want him to shift one inch from where he is. It's fascinating because this is love can't be without the beloved. So Jesus pressing me to himself told me, poor daughter of mine, poor daughter of mine, courage, your Jesus does not leave you. That's Joshua 1:5. I'll never leave you or desert you. Nor should you fear that you might go out of my will, because your will is chained to the immutability of mine. So you see how far she has gone in the divine will. I don't know if they use this language anymore. I might be indicating my age here. But there's a point of no return on a flight. That if they get to a certain point, there's no point in going back. Going forward is actually better. She's gone beyond the point of no return. She's actually gone into that sphere of eternity. So she's living the life of the blessed on earth. It's absolutely incredible. So she participates in the immutability. She's not going to change. And that's fantastic. So here I have given Deuteronomy 31:6. Hebrews 13:5. And John 14:18, and all of them, the Lord is saying, if you are my servant, if you are doing my will, if you are doing what I want, I am with you. Okay. So he said, at most it might be thoughts or impressions that you will feel, but not true acts. Now, we're moving on into the higher planes here of the divine will, and Your nature might react to something, but your will hasn't shifted. So your body and your emotions are registering something. You have not put your will into it. That's why he says it's just thoughts or impressions. And just push them aside. You don't even give them any thought. It's fantastic, isn't it? You know, it's an unbelievable thing. He has told us right from the very beginning that the problem is only in the will. And in early stages, when she wanted to be resentful about somebody, he said, don't put your will into it. So now he's saying to her, no, they're just thoughts and impressions that pass through your head. Isn't that wonderful? It's a wonderful freedom here. He said they're not true acts. The act involves the will. Okay. In fact, since the immutability of my will is in you, when yours might be about to go out of mine, you will feel the firmness and the strength of my immutability, and you'll remain chained more to it. Now, the advantage of being at this point is the weakness of human nature will always be there. Okay. The reaction of our poor humanity will always be the same. But he says at this particular point, when this weakness touches you, because you are chained to the divine will, you have the strength of the divine will coming in to bring you over that hurdle. I think it's fantastic. he says, my immutability helps you to deal with it, and you become even more strength. Now, that strength is what we call fortitude. And I always say that fortitude is the steel girders for your soul. Keeps you steady when the storms come. And besides, he said, have you forgotten that I am not only in your heart, but I'm in the whole world? Watch this now. And from within you, I direct the destiny of all creatures. So where is the throne of God on earth? It's in the heart of Louisa. So it wouldn't be any harm to put throne there beside it. From you, I direct the destiny of all creatures. What you feel is nothing other than the way that the world is with me. So it's at this high point that you can say that the sadness I am feeling right now is not actually mine. It's the sadness that the world is giving to Jesus. So I click into Jesus' sadness in Gethsemane and in his will offer it to try and help others. But at a very early stage, I don't think you could make that presumption. I think at an early stage, I'd know it was me. I don't know about you. So we have to be terribly honest about this. It's only at this, she's beyond the point of no return. It's at this point, she can be absolutely sure that whatever she's experiencing, it's actually his. And he's giving it to her to save souls. But when we cop on to what we have, we can pick up the pieces and join it to Jesus and save souls as well. But I do think we have to be honest. What you feel is nothing other than the way the world is with me. Now, my reaction to this is, first of all, he reigns in us and everything is through him and with him and in him. And then he reigns through us and everything is through us and with us and in us. Have you got that one? When you think about it, it's unbelievable. Everything initially is through him, with him and in him until he can make his throne in us, and then everything is through us, with us and in us. It sounds wrong, doesn't it? What you feel is nothing other than the way the world is with me, and the pains they give me is what you're experiencing. Since I am in you, they are reflected upon you, because in the divine will, you meet all souls, don't you? Therefore, you meet their problems. Ah, my daughter, how much does the world give us? Now you see everything has changed. Now, he hasn't said this before. It's the us. It's no longer you and me. It's us. How much does the world give us to suffer? And really mark the us there. It's a big change. But come, courage. When I see that you can take no more, I leave everything. Even if there's a world war on, he will leave everything. What does he do? Leaves the 99 and goes after the one sheep. That's the way he operates. When I see that you can take no more, I leave everything and I come to be with my daughter to cheer you and to cheer myself from the pains that they give me. And having said this, he disappeared. I think it's absolutely incredible to think that he leaves all the other stuff that he's doing for all other creatures and comes and spends time with this little one. So to me, that's the shepherd and the sheep and all the references you have to shepherd and sheep. So Louisa said, I was left saddened, yes, but with such melancholy. Now, melancholy is an old word, literally means sadness. And I wonder if it means depression. Just my question mark. That I felt myself dying, she said. I felt as though soaked in a bath of bitterness and affliction. That's why I would put the word depression on it. So much so that I did not feel the strength to say to Jesus, come. Then while I was doing my usual prayers, the incredible thing is she goes on with her flights in the divine will anyway, regardless of how she is. It's fantastic. My beloved Jesus came back telling me, my daughter, tell me, why are you so sad? Okay. I looked this up and then I got distracted, didn't I? 2 Corinthians 9, if I forgot to write it down, didn't I? 2 Corinthians 9. No, I've forgotten the verse. The phone went. It says, God loves a cheerful giver. Yeah. You'll find it in 2 Corinthians 9. God loves a cheerful giver. Why are you so sad? You see, there's no sadness in heaven. And there's actually no sadness in the divine will either. See, I come from the midst of creatures with tears in my eyes. My heart is pierced, betrayed by many. And so I say to myself, let me go to my daughter, my little newborn of my will, that she may dry my tears. And here she is all sad. With her acts that she has done in my will, she will give me the love and everything that the others don't give me. I will rest in her. Do you see what he wants? And I will cheer her with my presence. And you instead let yourself be found so sad that I have to put my pains aside in order to relieve yours. It should be the other way around. Don't you know? That is 2 Corinthians 9, 7. I did write it down. I just didn't see that I had written it. Don't you know that cheerfulness for the soul is like fragrance for flowers? Isn't that a beautiful image? It's like condiment on foods. It makes a huge difference. And it's like skin tone for people. Oh, we're very, very sensitive about skin tone. One of the things I used to joke with the girls in Africa about, I said, you're trying to make yourselves pale and our lot are trying to make themselves dark. Will you come to some conclusion at some point? We're terribly sensitive about skin. They wanted to lighten the skin and we want to darken the skin. Mm-hmm. And I said, your problem is you get too much sun and we don't get enough, you know. It's like skin tone for people. It's like maturation for fruits. There's a particular point at which the fruit is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Go beyond it and it's not so fantastic. But look at the images he gives. The images are so simple. They're so everyday. And that's what we want people to sort of get used to. It's like the sun for plants. Okay, so I want to give you a few, two references from Proverbs. Proverbs 15:13. And Proverbs 17:22. So Jesus said, with this melancholy, you have not let me find a fragrance that may cheer me, or a tasty food, or a mature fruit. Rather, you're all faded. Oh dear. Now she's having a bad day. I'd hate the Lord to tell me I was all faded. It might be true, but I wouldn't like him to tell me. You're all faded, so as to move me to pity. Poor daughter, he said, courage, cling to me and do not fear. I clung to him, Louisa said. I would have wanted to burst into tears. I felt my voice being suffocated. Overcoming herself, but she's getting help, isn't she, from the immutability? But I plucked up strength. I repressed my tears and I said to him, Jesus, my love, my pains are nothing compared to yours. So let us think about your pains if you don't add more bitterness to mine. So let me dry your tears and let me share in the pains of your heart. So he shared his pains with me, and while letting me see the grave evils in the world and those which were to come. That's your Amos 3:7. He shows the prophets ahead of time. Now, the evils in the world and those that are to come. The First World War is over. He starts showing her the Second World War. So just put World War II there. And he showed her the First World War for a number of years before it happened. And he showed her the Second World War for a number of years before it happened as well. Okay, so February the 8th, 1924, we're going to be talking about little souls. This is very important. I was fusing all of myself, see the all of myself, in the holy divine will. And in doing this, as the littlest of all, now there's your nothingness, but there's your ant as distinct from the elephant. You remember I told some of you?
Yeah.
Okay. I place myself ahead of all generations, even before Adam and Eve were created, so that before they would sin, I may prepare ahead of them an act of reparation to the divine majesty. I just love that. She makes an act of reparation before Adam and Eve sins. I think that's brilliant, isn't it? So that I may prepare ahead of time an act of reparation to the divine majesty. You see, this is a ministry to the glory of God. And so it's the same as the angels. Their ministry is to the glory of God. So I made an act of reparation to the divine majesty because in the divine will, there's neither past nor future. Everything is present. That means God is a single point, or what the astrophysicists are now calling a singularity. Okay. A singularity is so small that there can't be past or future in it. It's less than the dot that your pen will make on the page. Okay. Everything is present. And also, so that being little, I may approach the divine majesty in order to plead with him and to do my little acts in his will, so as to cover. Now notice, not change their origins, to cover them, to cover all the acts of creatures with his divine will. Because he'll tell us elsewhere that if an act has its origin in the human, it will remain that way. If it has its origin in the divine, it will remain that way. But he allows us to cover other people's acts so they become more pleasing in his sight. To cover all the acts of creatures with his divine will, and therefore be able to bind the human will, which had split off, with the divine and make them one. So that's what Jesus was doing in his lifetime as well. Now, while I was about to do this, my annihilation, my misery and my extreme littleness were such that I said to myself, instead of placing myself ahead of everybody in the most holy will, I should rather place myself behind everybody. Matthew 23:12 and Luke 14:11. That's taking the last place instead of the first place, okay? I should rather put myself behind everyone, even behind the last man who is to come. So here's the acknowledgement of the nothingness, okay? Since I am the most abject and the most miserable of all, it is the last place that befits me. So that's Matthew 20:16, where Jesus said that he had taken the last place on earth. The Son of Man came not to serve, but to be, not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now, while I was doing this, my beloved Jesus came out from within my interior, Luke 17:21. Taking my hand, he told me, my daughter, my little daughter, in my will, the little ones must be ahead of all, Matthew 19:30. Even more, they must be inside my womb, which I put Matthew 20:16. One who must plead, repair and unify our will, not only with our own, but with those of all, must be near us and must be so united with us as to receive all the reflections of the divinity. And I give you 2 Corinthians 3:18. That's receiving all the reflections of the divinity in order to copy them within herself. She must have a thought which may be the thought of all, a word, a work, a step, a love which may be for all, of all and for all. And since our will envelops everyone, may that thought of yours, which our will, in our will becomes the thought of all, that act, that love, shine in each thought, word and act of all generations. And in the power of our will, may they become antidotes, defenders, lovers and operators, but we don't change the origin of the act. And that's a very important point to make. So we'll just finish this one and then we'll leave it for tonight. If you knew, Jesus said, with what love our celestial Father awaits you And the joy, the contentment he feels in seeing you so little, if you understood the joy he has when you bring the whole of creation onto his lap to give him the return of all, he feels the glory. I'm going to give you John 10:17. He feels the glory, the joys, the amusement and the purpose of creation coming back to him. This is why it's necessary that you come before all. And after you've come forward, you will make a turn in our will and will go behind everyone. It's very interesting. First of all, she had to go ahead of everyone, and now she goes behind them. So she's the shield. Okay. And you will place them as though on our lap and will bring them all into our womb. Now, beside that, I've put John 13:14-16. And underneath that, Philippians 2:6-11. And we, he said, in seeing them covered with your acts done in our will welcome them with more love and will feel more disposed to bind our will with those of creatures so that it may return to its full dominion. Now, my sense of that, I'm not saying it's right. My sense of that is that what Louisa is asked to do is cover all the other acts. That's like saying you put a very acceptable garment on top, and out of sheer love, the Lord looks at the garment and not underneath it. He accepts what you've done. You've put this garment of grace over their acts, but you can't change the original act. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I think it's beautiful. And I think Lloyd has an image that might help us of the grace of the Lord being a garment over us.
Oh, yes.
In your bag. Yeah, it just might help us. It's wonderful, isn't it? Everything comes in hand. Look at it.
That's Elizabeth Wang.
One of Elizabeth Wang's ones. And there's Jesus having covered us with all of his grace and his glory. Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah.
And if I'm in there, then I'm acceptable to the Father. Aren't I? Yeah. I think that's what Louisa is actually talking about there.
The contrast between light and dark.
Yes, it's magnificent. But you've got all the variations of colour of graces and virtues and everything there as well. It's just wonderful. I think those pictures are very expressive because they're done on a mystical level. They're not just done on an ordinary human level. So here we are, and there's the Blessed Trinity in seeing them, the people covered with your acts done in the divine will, will welcome them with more love and will feel more disposed to bind our will to those of creatures so that it may return to its full dominion. Therefore, courage. The little ones get lost in the crowd. And this is why it is necessary that you come forward. You won't be seen if you don't. In order to fulfill the mission of your office in our will. In our will, the little ones have no thoughts for themselves. Now, the little ones, Matthew 18:1-3. The little ones get all the praise from Jesus. They have no thoughts for themselves, nor their own things, but everything is in common with the celestial Father. Therefore, just as everyone enjoys the sun, as they are all inundated with its light, because it was created by God for the good of all, in the same way, all enjoy the use of the acts done by the little daughter of the divine will. Now, there you're being told the whole human race benefits from your act. Isn't that wonderful? So think of us being allowed to put a garment that is acceptable onto the human race. Before the Father. I think that's a fantastic thing to make it much more acceptable and for him to say, yes, I'll bring my will upon the earth. In the same way, all enjoy the use of the acts done by our little daughter in our will, which more than the sun dart over all so that the son of the eternal volition may rise again with that purpose for which all generations were created. And I put a VIP on the next bit. Therefore, Do not get lost in the crowd of your miseries. Da-da. Mm. Do not get lost in the crowd of your abjection. Do not get lost in the crowd of your self-reflections, but think only about the office of the little one of our will and be attentive to your mission. I think that's a brilliant way to finish it. Isn't that fantastic? Because we have such a tendency to fall back into that position. Okay, we'll leave it there for now.